You're listening to Lights Out, and this is your hostess with the mostest ghostess, Sylvia Schultz. In this episode, we'll start our series of conversations with authors of ghost stories. Most of them will be authors of true ghost stories, my personal favorite, as I'm sure it is for some of you. But we're going to start out with a twofer, in more ways than one. Pull up your favorite chair, and let's go. Lights out. I really enjoy getting comments on the show from those of you who listen on iTunes or those who stumble across it on Facebook or on my webpage. The encouraging comments I get from you guys really just make my day. I'd like to give a shout out today to Johnny Venezia. He says, "Hey, Sylvia, I just wanted to say I heard you on my friends Tamara and Alistair's show, and I love your podcast." Thank you so much, Johnny. I hugely enjoy being on Haunted Nights Live, the show where Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross interview authors. They mostly chat with horror writers, but they've been gracious enough to invite me on several times as well. And they like appearing on Lights Out, too. So this episode will feature my conversation with two fabulous writers. Johnny, here's a twofer treat for you and for all my listeners. A chat with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross. All right, I am here with Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne, and we are going to talk about ghosts. Let's start off by talking about the ghosts of Ravencrest. What gave you guys the idea to write what's essentially a gothic novel?
First of all, thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Of course, enjoy being on your show. We both started reading gothics at a very young age. Tamara was really into, you know, Dark Shadows, and I loved, you know, Rebecca. And mm-hmm. when we got together and just started talking about, you know, wanting to write together, it was actually, it wasn't the first idea we had, but it was the first idea we had that actually manifested. And it kind of started out as being really sexy, and that's fine. It's still plenty sexy, but we kind of veered more into the ghostly and the gothic aspects of it.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was reading it. It started out just like hot and heavy, and then that kind of got soft-pedaled, and then the ghost came out. I like them both. I thought it was a wonderful book.
Originally, it was going to be paranormal erotica.
Oh, okay.
And Alice and I discovered very quickly that we didn't want to center every episode. It was a serial novel originally.
Yeah.
Around a sex scene. The characters, we've got pages of family history and family trees and all that stuff. And mm-hmm. there's too much to do to have sex every single time. we do have to have ghosts every single time. Or witches or grieving men, all kinds of things. We're doing a thing with the Scarecrow and the Witches of Ravencrest, which we're just starting up now. The first one will probably be out in December. There'll probably be another 8 episodes, and you know, every 6 weeks or so.
Okay.
And that's all.
Excellent. Now, how much research did you guys have to do for this? I mean, I mean, you talk about pages and pages of family history and family trees, and it's a lot to keep track of. And I was really entranced with your use of herbal medicine in the book. I mean, it was such a change from, oh, let's stick a couple leeches on them. And these guys actually, I mean, there was a reason that they knew what they were doing, but these guys actually knew what they were doing, and it worked, and it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. That's the 1788 section you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
The novella, Christmas at Ravencrest, which you can buy for 99 cents if you don't want to read the whole book.
Yes.
It's 1788 London, and we first meet the early Manning family, mm-hmm. and they have Bran Lanville. He's a physician and surgeon, and he's old, and he's sort of semi-retired. He just works with the family, so he lives there. He's a very close friend, and there's a lot about him that's far beyond. He knows about witchcraft. He knows about everything, and it turns out in modern day, he was on the cutting edge, right? Right around that time was when eucalyptus was first added to things. And he knows all this stuff. Plus, he can spot a witch at 100 paces. And so he's just really cool. And he is a knight of the Order of the Mandrake. So, Mandrake root.
Yeah.
And in modern times, Grant Pfister, the gentleman's butler from England, and our heroes, I'm watching a squirrel steal from a feeder right now. It's hysterical. I'm sorry. He's hanging off the roof. Hanging down by his toes. Grant Pfister is also a knight of the Order of the Mandrake, which isn't really a spoiler because he tells our heroine, Belinda, pretty early on. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole lot about that, and we're going to be exploring a lot more about that. But these guys are no ordinary. They're keepers of the Mannings, the family in the story, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Alistair, I should let you answer that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the research is really ongoing. Of course, for the novella Christmas Spirits that we did last year, that was the most fun because we had to go back and find out, you know, not only what people wore in England in the late 1700s, but how they spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how they ate, what they ate, all kinds of stuff. It was actually a lot of fun. What they did for entertainment, which makes me really, really glad that we live in 2015. But it's really ongoing because there's so many characters and so much information about all of them. This is part of the reason why we, you know, it's just kind of ongoing. You know, The Ghost of Ravencrest, it came out as a full-length book in September.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the 8 installments are all collected into the full-length book. And now we are going to focus on some more of the unanswered questions in The Witches of Ravencrest, as well as, of course, raise, you know, a few more questions. It's just, it's very complex, and we have really big files. We have, you know, family history. It's pretty complicated, but it's so much fun. You know?
And this time, we're going to our main novella, historical. Each one has at least one historical in it.
Oh, I so dig that.
And it'll be the early 1800s. Oh. We'll talk about what happened once the Mannings got to America and rebuilt their house over here.
Yeah. Boy, I can't wait. This is going to be great.
Oh, thanks.
Well, yeah, and it's so neat that you make the historical part available as a novella, too, because I really love all of it, but I'm just absolutely entranced with the historical part. And I just really dig the idea that there's this family and they have guardians watching over them. That is, it's just Ghosts of Ravencrest and then the upcoming Witches of Ravencrest are just really, really cool books, and I highly recommend them.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We really love doing it. We found out, we both of us always wanted to do a historical, but it takes a month to write a historical episode, whereas it takes a month of days, you know, most of the days of the week, but because of all the research. But for the regular ones, we write it one episode a month in basically one day a week, devoted to it.
Nice.
So we can't do all the historical, but this satisfies the need.
Yeah.
I didn't think, I wasn't sure that I'd, you know, enjoy doing that, but it's actually a lot of fun.
Today's podcast of Lights Out is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/DZPN. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Well, all right, tell me about the Cliff House haunting. And this kind of seems, to me, it seems to be a return to classic Tamara Thorne. I mean, this is wonderful.
I would say that, yes, the Cliff House haunting is definitely kind of like classic Tamara Thorne. We did that, you know, on purpose. You know, we were both very much involved, but it was a good way to be, you know, introduced. And we had actually way, too much fun writing this book.
Well, some of those characters are just atrocious. Dr. Seachert and Constance Welling. Oh, yeah.
Say her name again, the authoress. Say it out loud.
Constance
Welling. Not her middle name, Lee.
Constance Lee Swelling. Nice. Nice.
We had a lot of fun with that. But it's basically, it's about a water elemental. There's a serial killer who's, the water elemental is the Blue Lady, and she's actually assisting the serial killer. And it's character dense, and it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of really, and as the story progresses, the characters become, more deranged a little bit.
You can say that again.
it becomes pretty crazy. And keep in mind, what you read, we cut out about 50,000 words.
Wow.
It got so big and so crazy. We had to reel it in.
Man.
A lot of the scenes are so great with one character that we had to cut, that they're going right into our, the one we call the big one that we'll probably do in another year or so.
Oh, good,
we don't
good.
Have to change the scenes much.
Yeah. There was an entire thread of one character that we, really liked, and he was actually pretty central, actually.
Yes, he was the biggest one.
He was. And then what happened was we started going, through during edits, and it's like, okay, we need to cut like 50,000 words out of this. And we need to, condense it and make it, reader friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we loved this guy, and he was so central. But really, at the end of the day, when we looked at the manuscript as a whole, he was the one that made the most sense to cut. But these scenes were so great. His story was so great. So what we did is we cut him out. We tied up the loose ends. Put other characters in place where he. Where there were gaps.
We engaged one guy to give romance to the innkeeper's daughter. He was going to have romance with someone else, but we made him switch teams.
And so we have like 30,000 words just of this character, and we have this idea for a very large kind of apocalyptic.
Yeah.
A novel that we're going to do, within the next couple of years. And this guy that we cut out of The Cliff House Haunting fits perfectly into this story. So it's just, nothing's wasted,
Good. So your readers will benefit from all this work.
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
that. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Now, all of these...
Not that. You can't keep it, at all.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to do. Is really what it comes down to is you can't be possessive about things like that. You have to be more concerned with writing a good story.
Oh yeah.
And when we took him out, it was just the most logical thing to do, even though we'd spent so much time on him, and it made the story better. Otherwise, it would be like a 1,500 page book, and it's.
And it was easy because we already knew about the big one, and that he would be a perfect one of the characters in it.
Oh, good.
The writing.
Good. That makes it sting a little less, I'm sure.
Sometimes it's fun to cut them out. Like, oh,
but yeah, it's just it's just one of those things you just have to. It has to be about the overall what's going to make the story the best possible story.
Cool.
All right. So. Out of all these wonderful ghostly scenes, were any of these kind of based on any stories that you guys heard, previously? Stuff you remember from ghost stories from your childhood and stuff?
The main one, the in Cliff House, the sandwich that goes through the air and drops in front of, what's her name, Sarah.
Sarah.
Innkeeper's daughter. That was based... We used to have a business, my husband and I, that was in a building that had a lot of anomalies. Doors, you know, even the handles would shake on the doorknobs sometimes. Mm. And my cat was afraid of it. In the afternoon, it would get so active, and I'd have to take him home. But one day, we had an unopened can, thank God, of cat food, about 6 inches from the edge of the desk. And Ricky and I was holding him, watched it slide across the desk, kind of hover in the air, and drop. And then we saw the same sort of thing when we stayed at the haunted cabin in Gold Country, when we wanted to get together and meet, and we had the opportunity. Somebody asked me if I would check out this place he was afraid to live in after he bought.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw something similar to that. And so that went straight into Cliff House.
Yeah.
And then Cold Spots. The cold spots are, you know, in everything. I've been doing those for years.
Yeah.
I can't think of it. I know there's more.
We were actually in the middle of doing a different novel when we went to the cabin. And even though, you know, the Cliff House haunting is not, you know, a true story, the kind of subtle but creepy events that happened there is, you know, that's what got us mindset that we wanted to write a haunted, you know, a ghost story.
So brilliant.
We kind of put everything on hold and did that first, and I'm glad we did. I think that the Cliff House haunting is exactly, and like you said, it's like classic Tamarthorn. I think it was exactly the right book to release at the time that we did.
Yeah, I was itching to do some more haunted house stuff. And one thing, the Blue Lady, now that's a myth, a ghost story everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start researching it, it's very elemental. And I normally love the Green Man, which is a earth elemental.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This, she can be called a phantom. And we also put, we didn't name it, but we put the La Llorona myth in, too, the Spanish myth. And so that was real. And there's more. I just can't think of them offhand. But, yeah, there's... Alistair and I have both been reading ghost stories since we were little bitty kids, true ones too. So, of course, we've drawn those, whether we know we do or not. But the most fun is the ones one of us have actually experienced.
Oh, yeah. The personal experiences are the best.
Oh, I love them.
Now, Tamara, you got invited to write a couple of entries for Jeff Belanger's Encyclopedia of Haunted Places. Now, how did you get that gig?
I just knew him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did some photographs for it, too. I probably did. God, that's been forever now.
I know.
I knew him early on. I was one of the first real writers he met in person.
Mm.
And we were just... friendly. I think I did something for Ghost Village, and then I think in 2004 I went back there, and we stayed with him and his wife, and it was great. And he told us ghost stories, and we told him ghost stories, and then I did a guest spot for something in California down in around Whaley House, and I suggested they invite him. He was just getting into the books then, and I remember we were in room 309 at the Horton Grand, and he was in the next room over, and his room was scarier than our room. But that's how, I just knew him. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Scarier how? You can't say his room was scarier than yours and just leave it at that. You got to tell us why.
All right, our room was the famous 309 that supposedly a gambler got killed in the wardrobe, which is not the same wardrobe. And sometimes you can't open the wardrobe door because, well, the guy's in there and he's holding it closed. It's a story. And, well, we had some friends in. We were all sitting around. And one of them is the real agent of the paranormal in that he causes things to happen.
Mm.
And it was a rare, humid time in San Diego. And they didn't have air conditioning because they don't normally need it. And they left the room, and he and his wife left the room. They wanted us to go sleep on their floor or something because they were so afraid for us. Meanwhile, we had two double beds, and we took the one that was beneath the cold spot because it was so hot in there. You're supposed to be able to, you know, like set pennies out and the gambler takes them. So we did all that stuff. We also had the door of the cupboard, you know, the closet, the wardrobe stick. family, we have a wood floor at home, so all I did was keep pressing my foot around, and pretty soon it was really easy to open. I found the spot. But there was a transom window to the bathroom, so I left the light on in the bathroom, and we're sleeping under the cold spot, and Robert was asleep already, and I read for half an hour, and I got back up, like I always do before I go to sleep, to pee.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in the bathroom. I wear contact lenses. I have never lost one in 35 years, at least. Never. Mm-hmm. So I am just, you know, anal about that, which is funny in a bathroom. But I never, and we have cats, so we never, ever leave toilet seats up or anything like that. We had the shower curtain had been wide open because we don't like closed shower curtains. he hadn't been in there. I was the last one in there. The toilet seat was up, both of them, like a man would use it.
Oh.
And the shower curtain was closed. I walk in there, and I just, okay. And then I picked up the little, they used to keep little volumes, you know, of ghost stories in there, and I read some stuff, nothing about the bathroom. But that's what happened, and it was just delightful. And I stayed in the bathroom a long time reading because I was hoping that something else would happen, but it didn't.
Oh.
But next door, Jeff was in the Oriental room, which had this, we saw it the next morning. He ended up with horrible nightmares or something like that all night long.
Ooh.
And he thought that there were things coming through the wall. That's what it felt like in the dreams. And he said it was terrifying. But boy, did he have a great bed. It was all carved Oriental stuff. But I liked our room because it had so much cold spot left in it. Which was probably part anomaly and part fed anomaly by the guy who really created it. I sound like such a skeptic. Stuff happened in there.
Cool.
But I've seen other things that are far more interesting. So.
You know what I think when you say that the toilet seat was up and, you know, like a man would use it?
Hmm.
You know what I think is, I hope I don't have to pee when I'm dead. How annoying.
You know, the poltergeist we have in our house is a funny poltergeist, so I figure we just feed the energy. But these places like this, like Whaley House or Horton Grand or any place else, they're so overrun by tourists.
Mm.
They get psychic machines going off. And I've been in Whaley House late at night with just, like three other people, mostly cops. And other things happen there, aside from the ones that are reported. You hear the usual footsteps and stuff, but other stuff that isn't reported happens then. And I never say what it is because I don't want to ruin it.
Mm.
But psychic machines will get you every time. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they're not quite as good as the real thing.
Right. And Alistair, how about you? Do you have any personal experiences to share?
There have been a few things that have happened, you know, in my life, of course, that I, you know, haven't been able to explain. One happened a few years ago that, and this is going to sound like a UFO story, and I think that that's just cheesy, but I can't explain it. I don't think I was visited by a UFO or anything like that. But several years ago, my wife and I were sleeping, and the entire room lit up. In this really creepy, unnatural way. Like, it was like white, bright white light coming in, you know, through the windows. But it was a different kind of light. Like, it wasn't concentrated. Like, it didn't come through the window. It was just, the whole room was just white.
Mm.
And we looked at each other and we were like, what the hell? And we got up and, you know, looked out the window and there was just white, white, white light coming in. Everything was just white.
And you couldn't see a source for it?
No.
Wow.
No. And then it was just gone. And I don't think it was like a UFO or anything like that. I just don't. But I don't know what it was.
Mm.
And it was just really, really strange. Otherwise, I remember as a kid once, you know, seeing a woman in my room. I woke up again in the middle of the night. And, you know, of course, the logical explanation is that it was a dream. But it didn't feel like a dream.
Mm.
And I don't even to this day believe it was a dream. But I just saw a woman standing in my bedroom, didn't know who she was. She wore like a pale blue, you know, nightdress of some sort. She seemed completely unaware of me. It's like she was doing things that didn't correspond with her surroundings. What I mean by that is that I'm not sure what she was doing, but like, imagine someone trying to, watching someone drying and washing and putting dishes away or something like that without there being any cupboards or dishes.
Oh.
So she was doing something. She was just kind of going about her business, whatever that was, and it didn't correspond with her surroundings. And I said, "Is that you, Mom?" Which is, I knew it wasn't. But the funny thing is I wasn't scared. I remember rubbing my eyes really hard, and she was still there. And then she was just gone, and she didn't evaporate or, disappear. She just simply wasn't there anymore. And I just went back to sleep. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't upset. Nothing. And I remember the next day, of course, asking my mom if, of course it wasn't her. But, it's just, oh, it's just a dream, and, maybe. But it didn't seem like a dream to me.
Mm-hmm.
The long version, it sounded like you were wide awake. You weren't. It wasn't hypnagogics.
So I mean, there's things like that, I can't explain it. I don't know what I believe it was. I don't know.
How old are you?
This is what I like about Alistair. He's like me. We don't know what the stuff is we feel. We mm-hmm. just know things happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. I think that there's a lot we don't know, and I'm not necessarily convinced that it's that after you die you roam the earth I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we've all had an experience where, and this has happened to me before, and how do you explain it? How do you convince anybody? You're just sitting there doing something, and you just know somebody's next to you.
Yeah.
And it's just there's no question in your mind. And
how about all that rapping in the cabin outside the door? That scared this.
Yep.
Jesus.
And there's that. There's no way that could be, that could have been, a joke is miles out there.
Yeah.
But what is it? I don't know. And I'm pretty okay not knowing, I'm comfortable with this.
That's fun not knowing.
Yeah, that's the way I approach it, too. I mean, I don't have to find an explanation for everything. If I experience something weird, I just say, that was weird, and I just go on from there. And if nobody else believes me, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was out at the Peoria State Hospital Museum a few days ago. And I had gotten there before the caretaker did, and I didn't know if anyone was in the building or not. So I knocked on the door, and the way when you come into the building, the door opens and there's a vestibule, and just if you walk forward, you go into the first floor of the museum, but just to the right, there's a staircase that goes up. Just right at that vestibule. So I knocked on the door, and I heard somebody coming down the stairs and bonking around in there. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess somebody's here. And I knocked again, and nobody came to answer the door. And I looked through the windows, and there was nobody in there. And I texted the caretaker. I said, are you here, or are you still on your way? And she said, yeah, I'm still on my way. I had to clean up some dog barf, and she said, I'll be there in a few minutes. So I waited in the car because it was pretty cold, and she came up and pulled up, and I said, there's nobody in the building, is there? And she goes, no. And I go, hey, that's kind of what I thought.
See, how do you, and the thing is you're fully convinced that happened, and if somebody questions you about it or whatever it is, it doesn't matter because you know what happened.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how I've always felt. I'm like, I just, don't really, say much about it for the most part, but
yeah.
I can't, you can't tell me it didn't happen, but I don't know what it is, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
So many things can be explained away easily. I prefer to explain them away, but then the ones that you can't figure out, that's what I live for.
Exactly. Exactly. If you know that it's a raccoon or squirrels or something, that's fine. You can say, hey, that was a raccoon. But it's the stuff that you can't explain. That is what's really, really interesting.
Oh, it's the best.
For you, yes, you, the listeners of the Lights Out podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Free audiobooks include such titles as The Top 10 Things Dead People Want to Tell You by Mike Dooley, Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries by Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife by Mary Roach. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/DZPN. Again, that's audibletrial.com/DZPN for your free audiobook. Ah, wonderful, wonderful. So, what are you guys working on now?
Well, we are both doing solos as well as the next collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying much about our solos yet because they're pretty early in the making, but we do drop occasional pictorial hints on Facebook, meaning, mm-hmm. like, we'll post, like, you know, here are some images related to what we did today.
Yeah, I saw that.
That we're writing together, or it can be for our solos, uh-huh. and it's fun, and it's very misleading too.
It really makes people think.
yeah, they're all clues. They may have almost nothing to do with the plot sometimes. It's so much fun. But we're working on a thriller.
It's kind of like a Psycho meets Misery meets Gaslight meets Paint Place, and I know that sounds like a lot.
Holy cats!
But it's true. It's you know, we've got elements of it's crazy. I love the hell out of this one. This one's really special. Yeah. I love this.
Oh, it's so much fun. We giggle and scratch all day every day with this one. It is fantastic.
Exactly. This one, you know, like whereas Cliff House was fun. You know, because there was such a twisted kind of humor to it. And The Ghost of Ravencrest is fun because we get to explore so many different characters and so many different ghosts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, the solo stuff, The Crimson Corset, my solo novel came out in August.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. But this one, M, the one that we're working on now, is it's exciting.
Yeah.
in a way that nothing really has been. For me, so
there's still fun in it because the characters, you know, some characters simply we never write humor on purpose. I never have alone, and we've never done it together.
Okay.
Some characters that just suddenly pop up and say, "Oh, I'm going to do this now," or "I'm going to say this."
Mm-hmm.
But M is it's exciting, and it may be because we know what's coming, and it's a shocker.
It is. You know, this is. I really think, you know, like we said, like psychological thriller. It's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be totally honest with you, we don't. This could go a couple of different ways.
Ooh.
And and we don't know. We're okay with that. You know,
mm-hmm.
we know.
Yeah.
We're just kind of letting the story tell itself, and you know, for all we know, it could do a 380, and we could end up in a whole different spot than where we originally planned. But we like it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we like the character. The characters always know best.
Yes.
They're your true subconscious, and they do know best.
We have a pretty good idea of where this is going, and I don't imagine that it'll veer too far from the original plan, but it may, and that's perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna be a shocker no matter what.
It is because it's lots of twisty turny stuff.
Well, I gotta say, I got to the final page of the Cliff House Haunting, and I yelped. I had no idea who the killer was, and
I did.
I kind of embarrassed myself because I was at a book signing. Well, not a book signing, a convention and not much was going on. So I was reading, and I ended up finishing it. I ended up getting to the last page, and I yelped out loud. I really did.
Nice. That's what we like. And you know. I think that's great because, you know, the people that we had, you know, the only people who really read it before it goes, you know, gets out there is, of course, the editors. We have a few editors and, of course, our nearest and dearest, you know, inner circle people.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knew.
We wanted to do a surprise just like in Eternity. That's only the second surprise I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because nobody figures that one out either.
Yeah.
But we intentionally set out to do this, and so we're really happy to hear that. Mm-hmm. Oh, are we happy?
Yes.
And when the other killer, as there are two killers in the book,
mm-hmm.
volunteered all of a sudden to go nuts and become a killer, we just, oh, man, we were rubbing our hands together and giggling like 10-year-olds.
I believe it. I believe it. That is a scorcher.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd say the Cliff House Haunting is actually a prime example of how plots just kind of play themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, for example, you know, Dr. Seekert, he
stepped up.
He was kind of an afterthought. He was kind of just a, you know, just
really?
A filler.
He
was a filler character. And he just took center stage and ran with it, and we let him. And, you know, thank God we did, because he is, I love that character.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when they were in the funeral home, and he suddenly called the funeral director's the mortician's wife that name, I think we both had spontaneous orgasms. Oh, my God.
That was great.
He was just kind of slipping, and his faculties were slipping. And it was great. It was great. But he, you know, if we would have put reins on him and said, you know, no, you need to stay in your place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been nearly as much fun.
Exactly.
I really like that. I really like seeing a character come unglued like that. It's very Stephen King does that a lot, and I just love it.
That's my favorite thing. It's, oh, you've got to have characters come unglued. That's the best thing in the whole world. I can't think of anything better.
I'm sitting here giggling thinking about this.
Yeah.
I remember getting a text from my sister. You sick bastard! Who wrote this scene?
And we don't know. No idea who wrote what. So that's like, although it's especially nasty, I will usually take credit for it just to save him from any email. Because if a girl does it, it's okay. You know? But no, it's both of us. Our hands are all over everything, so it's like, yeah, we're both sick.
Like that, when people react like that, that's how I know we've done our job.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Well, you guys keep people guessing, and we will all keep an eye out for whatever you guys put out next. And what is there anything you guys want to particularly make mention of that people ought to be looking out for?
We are, ahead of time, though, before you say the normal stuff,
yeah.
We are, as soon as we finish this thriller, we are going to be writing the long-awaited sequel to Candle Bay, and we're going to do it together.
Ooh.
Because some of Alistair's vampires are going to join my vampires on a trip to eternity for a vampire family reunion.
Fun.
It's a vampire road trip, and I seem to be doing a radio announcement.
Doing the Candle Bay sequel, and also next year we'll both each be releasing probably a solo novel. And speaking of Tamara's solo novel, I have the honor of being able to read it as she goes. And
nice.
The diehard, you know, the Tamara Thorne fans out there are going to love this. This is excellent.
Alistair's great, too. I love Alistair's. We're each other's number one fans.
We are.
I can tell.
But yeah, so next year there should be several more things out there from us, including installments of The Ghost of Ravencrest, and a solo from each of us. It's kind of hard to say. We actually managed to get three novels out this year between the two of us, two collaborations, a solo from me. So I expect 2016 to be at least as productive.
Yeah, hopefully three novels, including we should finish the next Ravencrest.
Yes.
So we count that as a novel.
Yes.
Two solos and at least two books from us. Probably, maybe three. I don't know.
Holy
yeah,
cats.
Yeah.
Because
Candle Bay ought to be out by summer.
That is wonderful. All right, well, we will keep an eye out for all of that. And be sure to visit Alistair and Tamara on their respective websites.
AlistairCross.com and TamaraThorne.com, or you can find us on Facebook.
That works.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having us. We hope you don't mind the blood.
Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of Lights Out. I had such fun chatting with Tamara and Alistair. I hope you guys had fun too. Do look for their co-written novels, The Cliff House Haunting and The Ghosts of Ravencrest, and keep an eye on their websites to see what's coming up. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please feel free to visit my website, sylviaschultz.com, for all sorts of paranormal goodness, including a look at my most recent book, Hunting Demons. It's available on Amazon by following the link on the website, and it is also available on Kindle. Again, thank you for listening. Please join me next time when we will be exploring Haunted Rockford with author Kathy Kressel. Until then, keep your batteries charged, and we'll go. Lights out.